I want to tell you something about Abraham Lincoln you may not have known. This is back in 1832, decades before he became president. He gathered together a group of men to fight in the Black Hawk War. In those days, if you gathered a group of soldiers together, you were often placed at the helm, that you became the leader of them. And so, as was the case with Lincoln, he was given the rank of captain. But at this point in his life, Lincoln had no military experience. He did not know the tactics, and he had trouble remembering the simplest military procedures. For example, one day Lincoln was marching a couple of dozen men across a field and needed to march them through this gate into an adjoining field. Later, as he was recounting this incident, he said, "I couldn't remember, for the life of me, I couldn't remember the proper word of command for getting my company endwise. Finally, as we came near the gate, I shouted, 'This company is dismissed for 2 minutes, and it will fall in again on the other side of the gate.'" That was his way of getting them through. Well, as time went by, his level of influence in this military setting decreased. Others grew or advanced in their ranks, but Lincoln actually decreased in rank until finally he was demoted to the rank of private. I'm going to come back to Abraham Lincoln in a moment, but I want to use this incident in his life to cause us to think about a biblical character who experienced something similar. His name is Joshua. Joshua. I invite you to open your Bibles to Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13. And this is where Moses instructs the people of Israel that he's going to send spies to spy out the promised land, to get a report about how things are, the people there, but also to affirm to the people that it is a land flowing with milk and honey. I want to begin reading with Numbers chapter 13, the first two verses. "The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, everyone a leader among them.'" I want to underscore that. These 12 spies, each of them was a leader in their tribe. And Joshua was one of those. And so Moses gives these spies these instructions. I'm not going to read all of that. But the spies go in and spy out the land. They see the occupants of the land of Canaan at this point. You'll remember that there were some very tall people that were living in Canaan. They even bring back, they cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes that was so large, they had to put it on a pole and carry it between two men. So here come the 12 spies back, and two of them are carrying this huge cluster of grapes to show the people, yes, it is a land that's very productive, but we'll also see their report. Let's go down to verse 26 of Numbers 13. "So they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of that land. Then they told them and said, 'We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan.'" That's the majority report of the spies. Caleb speaks up. Verse 30, he has a different report. "Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it.' But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We're not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.' And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants." That had to be a figure of speech. But notice how they phrase it. The land which we saw, it devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, they came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight. They had what I've heard people call the grasshopper complex. So here are 12 spies, and we'll see 10 of them bring this negative report. The land devours its inhabitants. There's no way we can overtake it. But Caleb and Joshua, they give a positive report. Caleb, as we've seen, has said, "Let's go up. Let's take it. It's ours. God will deliver them into our hands." To whom do the people listen? You remember, but let's read it. Chapter 14, beginning with verse 1. The reaction of the people. "Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?' So they said to one another, 'Let us select a leader and return to Egypt.'" So yes, they listen to the negative reports. They listen to the 10 spies, and they're weeping and wailing and even inciting a rebellion here and wanting to select new leaders to take them back to Egypt. How soon they had forgotten how bad things were in Egypt. But they're thinking it's got to be better than the prospect that we have of going into this land filled with giants. Here Joshua and Caleb speak up again. Verse 6. "Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh were among those who had spied out the land. They tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, 'The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them.'" This is Joshua and Caleb, and their statement is based on faith in God and believing his promises, and they're telling the truth, aren't they? Don't listen to the negative reports. Let's go in. Let's take the land. Watch again the people's response. Verse 10, "And all the congregation said, 'To stone them with stones.'" To stone them with stones. God is so displeased. He's ready to finish them off. Moses, however, intercedes on their behalf. But God forgives them, but yet he makes this statement. God states that none of that generation would enter the promised land except for Joshua and Caleb. The rest would wander in the wilderness for 40 years. 1 year for each of the days, the 40 days that the spies spied out the land. In fact, of that generation, they would die outside the promised land. Their children would be able to inherit it. And the faithless spies, those 10 spies who had the grasshopper complex that said there's no way we're going to be able to overtake it, they died, verse 36 through 38, they died by the plague before the Lord. That's an overview of Numbers 13 and 14 and the count of the spies' report. But I want to zoom in on Joshua. I'm sure when we think of Joshua, we think of the leader that succeeded Moses. And here we've seen he is a leader. He's the one that's selected from his tribe to be one of the 12 spies. But we learn some things about Joshua here. His leadership was not accepted, wasn't acknowledged, it wasn't heeded, was it? He urged the people to move forward, but his influence alone couldn't sway them. And we see at this point in his life, perhaps like Abraham Lincoln's experience, Joshua had not matured into the leader that he would become. Even though he was right, he couldn't persuade the people to follow. So let's learn some things about the nature of leadership from Joshua. And one thing we see is that leadership is influence. Leadership is influence. Leadership is often misunderstood. When people hear that someone has an impressive title or an assigned leadership position, we tend to assume that that individual is in fact a leader, but that may or may not be the case. John Maxwell is recognized as an authority on leadership and even writes from a Christian perspective. And he suggests five myths about leadership that I want to review for you. Five myths about leadership. One is the management myth. A widespread misunderstanding is that leading and managing are one and the same thing. John Maxwell says, no, that's not the case. What's the difference between leading and managing? Leadership is about influencing people to follow. Management focuses on maintaining systems and processes. So we see the difference between the two. Former Chrysler chairman and CEO Lee Iacocca wryly commented on one occasion, sometimes even the best manager is like the little boy with the big dog, waiting to see where the dog wants to go so that he can take him there. And that would indicate that management is more about process, getting going in a certain direction, whereas leadership has to do with influencing people. So there's the management myth. Managers can maintain direction, but often they can't change it. To move people in a new direction, you need influence. Number two, another myth about leadership is the entrepreneur myth. People assume that all entrepreneurs are leaders. Many of them are. Some of them are not. Entrepreneurs are skilled at seeing opportunities and going after them. They see needs and understand how to meet them in a way that produces a profit, but not all of them are good with people. And if they can't influence people, John Maxwell says, they can't lead, because leading is about influencing people. Number three, the knowledge myth. Knowledge is power, Francis Bacon is credited with stating. If you believe power to be the essence of leadership, you might naturally assume that those who possess knowledge, a lot of knowledge, are therefore going to be the most effective leaders. That may not be the case. For example, you can go to some universities, major universities, and meet some brilliant research scientists and philosophers that are incredibly knowledgeable. But as far as leading people, not effective at all. Neither IQ nor education necessarily equates to leadership. Number four, the pioneer myth. Another misconception is that anyone who's out in front of the crowd is a leader. But being first isn't always the same as leading. For example, Edmund Hillary was the first man to reach the summit of Mount Everest. He did that in 1953. And there's been hundreds of others since then that have accomplished that same feat. But even Edmund Hillary wasn't the official leader on the expedition when he reached the summit. John Hunt was. But yet he's credited with being the first one to reach the summit. And the idea is, well, he must have been the leader. Edmund Hillary, traveled to the South Pole in 1958 as part of the Commonwealth Trans-Antarctic Expedition. He was accompanying another leader, Sir Vivian Fuchs. So to be a pioneer, to be the one out in front, doesn't necessarily make us a leader. To be a leader, a person has to not only be out front, but also have people intentionally coming behind him, following his lead and acting on his vision. Number five, and the greatest misunderstanding is about the position myth. The people think if a person has a particular position, he or she is automatically a leader. But the truth is, a person can have the title of a leader, but not be an effective leader. And a person may not have the title of leader and be an incredible leader. As Stanley Hufte has written, it's not the position that makes the leader, it's the leader that makes the position. In those five myths John Maxwell gives to underscore this point, and this we see this in Joshua so readily, that leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. Leadership is having the ability to influence people. True leadership, therefore, cannot be awarded, appointed, or assigned. It only comes from influence, and that can't be mandated. It must be earned. So look at Joshua again. We know him as the leader who succeeded Moses, the one who actually led the people of Israel into the promised land. But at this point, initially, as he's already a leader, he's a leader of his tribe, but he is unable to influence the people to follow God by faith and know that with God on their side, they can actually overtake the promised land. They can inherit it. He failed to influence the people to follow his lead. If leadership is influence, look at those 12 spies. Who are the most effective leaders? The answer is the 10 who brought the negative report. They were the better leaders because they had greater influence. So leadership is influence. Something else from Joshua. Leaders do not possess influence in every area. Joshua and Caleb, again, were selected. They're two of the 12 leaders of their tribes. However, they were unsuccessful in leading the whole congregation of Israel to follow God's instructions. Joshua was a leader with some influence, but he and Caleb's influence apparently didn't outweigh that of the other 10 leaders. Number three, our influence is either positive or negative. Our influence is either positive or negative. What do you think? If all 12 spies had come back saying, yes, the land is flowing with milk and honey, it's very fruitful, and yes, there are some people there and even some giants, but we believe that with God on our side, we can overtake this land. If all 12 of those spies had brought back that kind of report, do you think the people would have been more receptive to it? But 10 of the 12 brought back that negative report. Two of the 12 still had faith. They were positive. You see, influence is a two-edged sword. It cuts both positively and negatively. 10 unfaithful tribal leaders used their influence to lead the people astray, which led to disaster for the people. Which brings us to number four. Faithful leaders use their influence to add value. Joshua and Caleb, when they encouraged the people, let's go, let's follow God's instructions, let's go and overtake this land, whose interest were they looking out for? The people. We can do this. This is God's gift to us. If He delights in us, then He will give it to us. And they're thinking about the well-being and even the blessing for the whole nation. Those 10 negative spies, who are they looking out for? Probably beginning with their own necks. They don't think they can do it, and so they even perhaps use some exaggeration here. All the inhabitants are giants here, and so they manipulate the people for their own protection. But faithful leaders use their influence to add value. But another lesson we learn from these 12 spies is that with influence comes responsibility. The ten unfaithful tribal leaders, perhaps they didn't want to start a rebellion, but that's what they did. And they also were held accountable for their influence, their negative influence, and died of a plague. And all of their followers, all those people that listened to them, save Joshua and Caleb, had to wander in the wilderness and eventually died as well, without inheriting the promised land. With leadership, there comes, with influence, there comes responsibility. Let me think about Abraham Lincoln with you again. All right, he started out in 1832, gathered a group of soldiers. He was named captain, but he didn't know what he was doing and actually was demoted. But that's not all there is to Abraham Lincoln's story, is it? We know from history that he grew in his influence, that he overcame his inability to influence others. Yes, he ran for office many times and lost a lot, but he, over time and with much effort and personal experience, he became a person of remarkable influence and impact and one of the nation's finest presidents. Let's go back to Joshua. And we see the same thing is true about him. He was ignored. He had people in Israel that wanted to stone him to death because of his faith and because of the influence he was seeking to exert. But we know that wasn't always the case. So watch Joshua's growing influence and what contributed to it. Well, I think one thing is his influence grew because of his relationship with Moses. Moses was Joshua's mentor. Deuteronomy 31 has a section about Moses speaking to Joshua and telling him what God wanted him to do. Let me read one passage, Deuteronomy 31 verse 7. Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, "Be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people to the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall cause them to inherit it." So here's Moses already telling Joshua what he's going to do with God's blessing. And no doubt because of Moses' influence, Joshua grew in his own leadership ability to influence others. A second thing was simply time and maturity. Joshua gives basically the same speech in Joshua chapter 1 that he does in Numbers chapter 14. In Numbers chapter 14, we've seen the people reject his speech. They don't want to do what he says. He doesn't have influence over them. In Joshua chapter 1, however, basically the same speech. This time, the people receive his word. They're ready to follow him into the promised land. Which brings us, number 3, it's also an issue of timing. In Numbers chapter 14, the people don't want to go. They don't want to cross over into the Jordan River. They don't want to move. But in Joshua chapter 1, after they've been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, that second generation, they're ready to get out of the wilderness. And so they respond now to Joshua, whose leadership has been tested. Now they see what you said, Joshua, is true. We trust you now, and we're ready to follow you. And they respond, here's a quote from Joshua 1:16, "All that you command us, we will do. Wherever you send us, we will go." But it was only when those Jews grew tired of wandering in the desert that they heeded the words of Joshua. Sometimes we don't want to move until we're ready. Joshua was able to exert more influence later as his influence grew. Number four, he possessed patience and integrity. Joshua continued to grow. By the way, yes, Joshua and Caleb enter the promised land. But do you also recognize that they had to wander in the wilderness for 40 years? They could have taken that and complained. That's not fair. We're the ones, Lord, that brought back the good report. We're the ones that tried to encourage the people to go in and possess the land with your blessing, but they wouldn't listen to us, Lord. But we don't find that kind of language. What we do find is consistency and credibility on the part of Joshua. He continues to lead. He continues to grow in his influence. He marches alongside his fellow Israelites as they wander through the wilderness. But he's being shaped to be that leader to bring them into the promised land. But a fifth thing that made Joshua grow in his influence is that he was right. He was right. From the beginning, Joshua tried to do the right thing. He tried to be obedient to God, trust God to fulfill what God had told him would happen. And now they see, you know, he was right. So now they're willing to follow his lead. His message never changed, and eventually everyone saw that he was right. Let me conclude with this statement from John Maxwell. Leadership is all about influence. And Joshua demonstrates that influence comes down to character and conviction. What we see in Joshua, whose leadership was rejected initially, is one that just continued to grow until finally people knew him, they respected him, they saw that he was consistent, that he was a man of great character, and that they could trust him and therefore followed him. And we study things like this. I wanted to study things like this to remind us all that we're all leaders. We all have influence over people. We may not recognize just how much influence we have. But remember, it can be both positive or it can be negative. And I know we want to have a positive influence. So let's learn from Joshua. Let's learn to be consistent. Let's learn to be people of conviction and allow that to mold our character. And to be the type of leaders that can say with Paul, "Follow me as I follow Christ." But to lead people in that direction, we have to go that way ourselves. So it may be tonight that some have made that decision. I want to follow Jesus. I want to surrender my life in obedience to the gospel today and then continue to live for Jesus every day that follows. If that's your decision tonight, if you're ready to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, or if you desire the prayers of the church tonight, maybe our influence hasn't been good. Maybe there's some changes that we need to make. And perhaps we desire the prayers of the church for forgiveness, but also for strength to help us be the influence that God has called us to be. If you're subject to the invitation of Christ, please come right now as we stand and sing.